You're listening to After the Storm, Where the Healing Begins on UK Health Radio. I'm Brian D. Smith, founder of Grief to Growth and a certified grief guide, life coach, and author. This part of my journey began after the passing of my 15-year-old daughter, Shayna, so I'm doing the work too. Each week, we explore the journey through grief, not just surviving loss, but discovering who you're becoming on the other side of it. This is where the healing begins. Hey there, for the past several weeks, we've been clinical together, and that's been on purpose. We've talked about what grief actually does to your body, the cortisol, the fog, the exhaustion that sleep doesn't touch. We've walked through the models people use to make sense of grief and where those models get misapplied. We've looked at techniques, the tools you can actually pick up and use when the waves hit. And we spent time in the evidence, real time in the evidence, the research that points again and again and again toward a worldview where consciousness doesn't simply end when the body does, where there's something more. Well, again, that was intentional. Grief needed ground under it before it could hold the weight. But today, we're leaving the clinic. And it's not because the science stops mattering. It doesn't stop mattering. But because there's a question underneath all of it that no study, no model, no technique can fully answer. It's the question that finds almost everyone who has ever loved someone and lost them. Why? Today, we're going to get philosophical. We're going to sit with the hard questions instead of managing around them. And I want to tell you up front, you may leave this episode with more questions than answers. Now, that's not a failure of the episode. That's the honest shape of the territory that we're walking into. All right, here's what I hope you carry over the next 40 minutes. One, you don't need answers to heal. Two, you're allowed to believe the person you lost is still with you in some form and still grieve them with your whole chest. Those two things are not in conflict. And you're allowed to grieve in your own way, on your own timeline. No quota, no comparison to how anyone else carries it. Let's start where this always starts for me, and that's with Shayna. My daughter Shayna was 15 years old when she passed away. That was June 24th of 2015. Shayna was always an inquisitive child to the point where it drove me insane. Shayna would ask why relentlessly. As a little girl, it was a question that followed every answer I gave her. Why and why and why again? Until I ran out of answers and just started saying, Shayna, that's just because it's the way it is. Now, if you've raised a kid, you know this is a sentence you swore you'd never say, and then you said it anyway. It used to wear me out a little bit, but now it feels prophetic. Because why is the question grief hands every one of us, whether we're ready for it or not. Since you're listening to this episode, it's probably because why found you too. It found you at 3 a.m. It found you in a grocery store aisle. It found you in the silence after everyone else has gone back to their lives and yours is still standing in the wreckage. Here's a truth that I want to name plainly. Grief isn't only pain and longing and loss. Grief is a crisis of meaning. It's not just that you lost someone. It's that the story you were living in, the one where things made sense, where effort was rewarded, where the people you love stayed, that story just got torn open. And you're standing in the terror trying to figure out what story you're in now. The whole ground is falling out from underneath you, and you feel like you're free falling. That's what we're going to sit with today. Before we can ask why something terrible happened, we have to ask a bigger question that's underneath it. Why are we here at all? What is any of this for? Every culture, every era, every tradition of thought, philosophy, religion, and now science has been asking some version of those questions since humans first had the capacity to ask anything. We are meaning-making creatures. It's not a personality trait some of us have and others don't. It's built into the architecture of being human. We have to make sense of things. Now, some have accepted that the universe is just an accident and we are accidental biological robots without any meaning and we are born and we die and that's it. That's okay if that's something you've accepted. That might be your sense of meaning if that works for you. But I love this saying by Nietzsche. He put it in a sentence that stayed with me for years. He who has a why to live can bear almost any how. So think about what that means. What that actually means in your body, not just in your head. if you understand why something is happening, it seems to redeem whatever the pain is you might be going through. I like to think about small things to help me understand big things. Let's go with the example of a vaccination. Now, if you're a toddler and your mother takes you to the doctor to give you a vaccination, you might wonder, why is she doing this to me? A needle going into your arm is objectively unpleasant, but your parent takes you to get the shot because they know it's happening. And they know that there's a long-term benefit to the short-term pain. Think about going to the gym. A hard workout hurts. Your legs are on fire. Your lungs are screaming. But you push through it because you know what is building. You're building strength. You're building endurance. You're building resilience. Pain without purpose is unbearable. It's simply suffering. Pain with purpose is survivable and can even be redemptive. Pain in this life is mandatory. Suffering is optional. Now, that's not a cute metaphor. That's actually the mechanism. And it opens up an idea I want to plant early and let grow over the next few minutes. Maybe life isn't random. And maybe it isn't rigidly scripted either. Maybe it's something in between. Purposeful participation. You're not just a passenger. And you're not reading from a script that someone else wrote word for word. You're in it, shaping it, and being shaped by it. There's a great movie, and it was based on a short story by Philip K. Dick called The Adjustment Bureau. And in The Adjustment Bureau, there are these agents running around who have a plan. There's an overall plan for what was supposed to happen in people's lives. But there is free will, and there is even some randomness built in. So the agents are constantly adjusting what they put in front of people to either slow them down or speed them up or adjust their path a little bit to make them hit their marks to have this overall arch of the universe. I don't want to ruin it anymore for you. It's a fantastic movie. The thing I like about it is it's not either or. Again, you're not just someone playing out a script word for word that someone else wrote. But it's also not crazy random. There's some overarching meaning to it. This is a model that works for me. So this is a tension I want you to hold as we go further. If life has no meaning at all, then loss to me is simply unbearable. It's a random, senseless subtraction with nothing to hold on to. But if life has too neat of a meaning, if every hard thing gets wrapped up with a tidy bow, we risk something I think that's just as damaging. We risk what's called spiritual bypassing. We dismiss real, jagged pain with an answer that's frankly too smooth to be honest. And I'm going to talk about why that pain is actually important. I think the truth lies somewhere in between these two cliffs, and that's where we're headed. It's not that life has too neat of a meaning. There is some uncertainty. There is a real feeling of jeopardy and risk and loss, but it's not just meaningless either. So let's talk about this, the cruel why. Why do bad things happen to good people? Let's say the quiet part out loud because pretending it isn't in the room with us doesn't make it go anywhere. This question, why do bad things happen to good people, has broken faith for people you know, and maybe even for you. I want to be honest with you before I go any further. No answer I give you today is going to remove the pain of this question. If I could hand you an answer that made the egg stop, maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. And I'll tell you why I say that. I want to offer this as a reframe, not as a solution, but as a different angle to look from. Maybe the universe isn't cruel. Maybe it's complex. Now, those aren't the same thing, and the difference actually matters. Cruel implies intention to harm. Complex means there's more going on than we can see from where we're standing, and that we're not seeing the full view. Now, here's a distinction I want you to sit with. I want to walk you through a thought experiment. I call it the creator thought experiment, and I use it because it forces a question into a shape you can actually turn over in your hands. Imagine you're the creator of this universe. You get to decide whether it's going to be a, quote, perfect universe with no suffering at all, or whether it's going to be a universe with some suffering. So let's play out those two scenarios first. If it's a perfect universe with no suffering at all, that means everything that you would desire would happen the moment you think about it. because to wait would be some form of suffering. So if everything happens the way that you want it to happen, if every person speaks the word you expect them to speak, if every desire is met right away, basically the entire world is just an extension of yourself, and you really can't even experience yourself. But let's imagine you allow a little bit of suffering in, a little bit of gap between what you want and what you get. How much do you allow in? What do you take away? What do you allow? Would you allow mosquitoes? Well, mosquitoes cause disease, so you get rid of those, right? Disease itself, you get rid of that. Disappointment, nobody wants that. Cut it. Loss of any kind, eliminate entirely. See where I'm going with this? Next thing we know, we've reduced this back to that perfect universe. We've made it so that every desire is met the instant it appears. So nothing's ever hard. So how much is enough? And here's what the thought experiment, I take it to the next level. Whatever amount of suffering that we allow, I argue the beings in the universe would always say it's too much. If the worst you could do to yourself would be to say, scrape your skin, scrape your knee, that would be unbearable to you. If you don't believe me, think about this. Anyone who's ever had a child, you've seen a child fall down and scrape their knee. They scream bloody murder. They cry. They roll around like it's the absolute end of the world. They're inconsolable. But to the parent kneeling next to him, it's a wound that will heal in a few days and probably won't even leave a scar. Same event, two completely different vantage points based entirely on how much you see. As the parent, you know things could have been so much worse. Your child might have broken a leg. Your child might have been seriously injured and sent to the hospital. So we know that a scrape is not that big of a deal. When you have a child and they say they want ice cream for breakfast, imagine a 2 or 3 year old says, I want ice cream for breakfast. And you say, no, you can't have ice cream for breakfast. We're going to have pancakes or waffles or whatever it is. And then you say, but you can have ice cream for dinner. Well, for that child, dinner is forever away. Again, total meltdown. And I want to offer this to you gently because I know it can land wrong if it's handed over carelessly. So I want to say this. Maybe the people who have crossed over see our trials and tribulations the way a parent sees a scraped knee. It doesn't mean the pain isn't real. I'm not saying that the pain isn't real, but it's held with kind of a compassion that comes from a perspective that we don't have yet. They don't dismiss it. They don't minimize it. They just see it from further up the hill than where we're standing. And that might go to the disappointment of losing a relationship, to losing a job, to maybe even having a person cross over, to losing a person, because they know that we're going to see that person again someday and we're going to miss them until then. Let's go to the next thing, the next hard thing. Why does death exist? Maybe we can accept mosquitoes. Maybe we can even accept disease. But why death? Death feels like an error in the system, like something went wrong that shouldn't have gone wrong. And I understand that instinct completely. I felt it myself more times than I can count. Again, just unbearable. Why? Why would we do this? Why would this be allowed? Well, without impermanence, there's no urgency. Without endings, there's really no depth. Think about anything that's ever mattered deeply to you. And I guess if you traced it back, its value was at least partly built on the fact that it wouldn't last forever. A sunset is special to us because it comes and it goes. A conversation, a season of your child's life that you didn't know was almost over until it was. My daughter's toddler years are precious to me. So here's the reframe I want to offer.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Death isn't the opposite of life. It's a transition of form. So what do I mean by that? When we think about death, often from our perspective, we think that means death and life are opposites. You are alive and then you're dead. You no longer exist. But if we think that the person that we go on, it's not the ending of our life. It's a transition of form. We go on in some other form. So this is not to deny that death exists, but to reframe it. And I was at a conference this weekend, and Dr. Mary Neal was there. If you don't know who she is, she's a person who had a near-death experience, very famous near-death experience. She drowned while kayaking and had a miraculous experience after that. But when she was talking, she said she uses the words died and death. And I typically don't use those words because they have this connotation. A lot of times people think of death as the end. So she went on to say that, you know, we have to redefine what we think death is, because the fact is our bodies do die. Our bodies do cease to exist. They cease to go on. But the person, the one that we loved, I believe does go on. And I've given you some evidence for that in prior episodes. The thing about death is, I think about Shayna's death, it changed the way I live. It absolutely 100% changed almost everything about how I live. It changed how I love the people still in front of me. It changed how I pay attention to a conversation, to an ordinary Tuesday afternoon, to the ordinary minutes I used to let pass without noticing. Shayna's death sharpened everything for me. So here's a key idea I want you to take from this particular section we're talking about. Death ends a body, but it doesn't end a relationship. So let's go back to the creator thought experiment for a second, because there's a harder version of it that I haven't asked you yet. So as a creator, maybe we agree that you're going to let some bad things in. And to further emphasize that point, let's say you didn't. What kind of creatures would live in this creation that you've created? Could they ever learn compassion? Because who are they going to be compassionate to? No one's ever suffering. Could they ever learn patience? Because no one's ever waited for anything. Could they ever learn empathy? Could they learn to be generous? Could they learn to be kind? All these traits that we admire so much in people, they're typically learned by going through some sort of suffering. And if you think about people who've had very, very relatively little suffering, who had everything handed to them, who've never had to work for anything, who've never had to strive, what kind of people do you see? I remember when I was a kid, there was a kid down the street from me, and he wasn't an only child, but he was kind of treated like an only child. He had an older sister, but his name was Kevin, and Kevin got everything. Kevin had a basketball court in his backyard. Kevin had every game that was known to man, and we used to like to go to Kevin's house and play because Kevin had everything. But Kevin didn't appreciate what he had. He never really wanted to play. He didn't want to play basketball. He didn't want to play with his games. He was just like, he wasn't a great kid to be around, frankly. And I think about that as we scale it up to people that we see in our world that have everything. And they don't seem to be people that we really want to hang around with. They're not people that we admire. The people that I have on my podcast, my Grief to Growth podcast, the people that I admire, the people that are just wonderful, salt of the earth people you want to be around, those are people who have gone through some sort of suffering. So again, we talked about there may be some level of discomfort being necessary, But here's the thing. What if that suffering isn't imposed on us? What if we actually choose it? What if we say, yeah, I want to go through a certain event or a certain thing that happens to me because I know that thing is going to make me a better person? We can take this to an extreme and say everything happens for a reason. Now, everything happens for a reason, said carelessly in passing to someone who's still bleeding, that doesn't help. Please don't say this to someone who's just lost someone. Everything happens for a reason. Saying things like God needed them doesn't help either. And if I'm honest, it's one of the phrases that makes me the most uncomfortable when I hear it said to a grieving parent. So I want to introduce something instead carefully because I don't want you to hear this as a mandate. Some people find real peace in the idea that there's a soul level perspective at work, that on some level, none of us can fully access from here, that there was a choosing involved. Now, again, I want to be very careful. I'm not telling you have to believe this. I'm telling you it's a lens some people carry and it works for them. And here's a part I want to offer very clearly as well. If you believe in soul planning, if you choose to hold that lens at all, I want you to know it's not about blame. It's about context. It's never meant to be a way of saying someone deserved what happened to them. It's not a way to not have sympathy or compassion for people. It's not a way to say you should have seen it coming or that grief is somehow optional if you just believe hard enough. And I don't want you to say, well, why would I have empathy for you or why would I care, you know, about your pain if you chose that pain? That's where the idea of karma, I think, is really screwed up sometimes because people can look at someone and say, well, if you're suffering, that's your karma and you deserve it. And it can be a way of excusing us from helping. I don't want that at all. But this is a wider frame that I offer gently for those of you who find that helps you carry what otherwise might feel unbearable. This concept was introduced to me by someone who's become a good friend, but it was 6 months after Shayna passed away. And her name is Suzanne Wilson. She's a world-famous medium. And I had a reading with her. It was a phone reading. And she said, Shayna is saying that this had to happen. I understood enough about the afterlife that it made some sense to me. I was 6 months on my grief journey. It still hit me hard. And I'll tell you this, I didn't accept it right away. I didn't just take that and put it in my back pocket and say, oh, okay, well, this had to happen. It took me probably a couple of years to really wrestle with it and play with it and accept it. But I want to do this. When it comes to the idea of losing someone, from the limited human perspective we have, and I understand we're only human, right? So we do have a human perspective. From the biological perspective, we miss that person tremendously. We talked about biologically why we miss them. But what if we zoomed out? What if we think about where did they go? Where are we going? What if we are eternal souls? What if you're not bodies that happen to have consciousness for a while and then stop? But what if we're consciousness that happens to be wearing a body for a while we're here in this particular stretch of time? If we came from somewhere and we're going somewhere, then the shape of a life isn't a line that simply ends. It's a longer arc. And what we're living through right now is the only piece of it that we can currently see. Like standing so close to a mural that you can only make out a few square inches of paint and mistaking that few square inches of paint for the whole picture.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now, if that's true, and I want to be honest with you, I can't prove it the way I can prove a math equation. We talked about what that means to not be able to prove it. But I think I've given you enough evidence that I can make this claim at least slightly. But here's what follows if that's true. Your child, your spouse, your parent, whoever you're grieving, they didn't die. Not in the sense that the word usually carries. Not as an ending. And I'm going to say this really briefly because we spent whole earlier episodes in this evidence, and I don't want to repeat it wholesale. I don't have time today. Near-death experience research, studies pointing toward consciousness existing independent of brain activity, afterlife themes that show up again and again across cultures that never had contact with each other. It's all there if you want to go looking, and we've looked at it together already this season. What I want to offer you here isn't the research, it's the lived knowing. The relationship doesn't end, it changes form. Shana is still present to me, just differently accessible than she used to be. In some ways, frankly, more accessible. If I just think about her, she's with me, but she's not accessible to me biologically. I don't get to call her on the phone. I don't get to sit across the table from her. But I truly do not experience her as gone either. I experience her as here in a form that I'm still learning the language of. Love didn't disappear. It changed states. I need to catch something here before it gets away from us, because the last section that I just went through can lead somewhere I don't want to leave you. If you truly believe the big picture, that zoomed out, that we are eternal souls, that nothing's really lost, love just changes form, you might land in a conclusion that sounds logical, but it's actually a trap. You might think, then grief isn't even spiritual. Why grieve what never really died? Grief is not even logical. And I say this, you know, when someone goes on vacation, or when your son or daughter goes off to college, you're not going to see them for a while. You don't grieve them. You miss them. You love them, but you don't grieve them. So I think there is some aspect of grief that there is a little bit underneath that we don't think we're going to see them again. And that's totally logical as a human being, because biologically, physically, you're not going to see them again. So I want to say grieve. Grieve hard. The pain is actually necessary. The pain is what forces you to dig deep. It's what makes you grow into however you're becoming. If you skip the pain, if you rush straight to the comfort of the eternal soul framing every time it hurts, you skip the growth the pain was there to produce in the first place. That's why I said earlier, I don't know if I would take away your grief if I could, because your grief is what forces you to grow. The grief is what causes you to dig deep. Those why questions are what cause you to dig deep. So here's the balance I want to hand you. We don't get to live only in the divine. And we shouldn't live only in the physical. We live in the tension between the two. And that tension is grief. I mentioned earlier Dr. Mary Neal was at the conference I was at this weekend. It was a Helping Parents Heal conference, a conference for parents who have lost children. And Dr. Mary Neal is my hero. I actually got to have conversations with her. I got to spend some time with her. Her near-death experience is fascinating, but what she really inspires me by is not just the near-death experience. She was able to cross over and to see how everything works together, how it all works for the good, as it says in the Bible, how it all works together for the good. It's kind of like when we're looking at life from this side, we're seeing the back of a tapestry. But when you go to the other side, that back of the tapestry is all these strings and stuff. It doesn't make any sense. We go to the other side, we see the front part of the tapestry, and we see how it makes sense. After seeing all that, she was told that her son, Willie, would pass away in the next decade or so. And she lived with that for about 10 years, holding it to herself, until Willie actually did pass away about 10 years after her experience. Here's what really struck me. After having seen, knowing where Willie was, after having seen the plan, she still grieved. So what I'm saying is, having this knowledge, even if you hold it dearly to your heart, it doesn't mean that you don't grieve. So grief is not an obligation. It's not something that you have to do, but it's certainly not something to bypass. And there's no certain amount of grieving that you have to do. You don't. Your loved one's not sitting there measuring how hard you grieve for them. And don't let anyone tell you that if you love more, you're going to grieve longer or you're going to grieve harder. Some people grieve loudly, out loud, in front of everyone. Some people grieve quietly in a way nobody else ever sees. Some people feel peace early and then feel guilty for feeling peace early, as if they skipped a step they were supposed to suffer through. Your grief is your own grief. And you know what? It might be different for every person that you lose. Here's my message to you on that. There's no correct way to grieve, only honest ways. And honesty means not skipping straight to the big picture just to avoid the pain that the big picture can't actually do the work of. You've got to be in your grief. You've got to feel the pain. You've got to feel all of those things. I said I wanted to hand you something, and I want to hand you this, and I can never decide whether I should call this an axiom or a hypothesis. So the difference being, an axiom is a first principle. It's something that is foundational. It's something that we build everything else around. And it can't necessarily be proven. It's a starting point. A hypothesis is something that a scientist comes up with and says, I'm going to test this. So I was with Dr. Gary Schwartz this weekend as well. So Dr. Schwartz might say, I'm going to take this and I'm going to test it. When I'm going to give you, you can't put it in the laboratory and test it and prove it in that sense. I was also with Mark Anthony this weekend, and Mark Anthony is he's a lawyer. He's actually practiced law in front of the Supreme Court. And Mark talked about the preponderance of the evidence, as you've heard me talk about many times, proving things beyond a reasonable doubt. Only you can determine how much evidence it takes to accept the things I've been telling you for the last several weeks. You are the judge and the jury. You are the one that gets to determine what evidence you let in, and you're the one that gets to determine how much weight you're going to give to each piece of the evidence. So I can't do that for you. But what I do want to do is give you this to think about, to play around with, what Suzanne Wilson told me all those years ago. And you can word it like everything happens for a reason, which I mentioned earlier is a platitude that I hate when people give it to someone early in grief without having earned it and without having to really think about it. Or I mentioned also earlier, Romans 8:28, all things work together for the good. So when I first heard this, being the skeptic that I've always been, being someone who's kind of a pessimist, a glass half empty kind of person, I was like, you know, obviously this is not true, that everything happens for a reason or that everything works together for the good, because I've seen a lot of bad things and there can't be any good in that. Thing is, as I've gotten older and I've learned and I've grown and I've had more experiences, I realized that saying everything happens for the good or everything happens for a reason doesn't mean nothing, quote, bad is going to happen. What it means is that there might be something beyond what we see on the surface. And I'll give you a really quick example. When my daughter Kayla was just a few months old, I was unfairly fired from a job. And I was so angry. I wanted to sue this company. It was not my fault. My wife was staying at home with her. I was the only breadwinner. And I thought, there can't be anything good about this. I was certainly not grateful for what happened. But I lived with it. I didn't file a lawsuit. I said I was going to roll with it. And after a week or so, I guess it was, maybe not even that long, I thought, wait a minute. There's a company I've been working with who's expanding and growing and doing really well. And they have a territory open up where I was living, where actually most of my clients were. And they're about opening an office in this territory. The thing is, it was a big risk. It was a job that was 100% commission-based, no salary. And I was moving to a new place where this company had never had an office before. Now, this is not an opportunity I would have taken if I'd had something better, because it was, as I said, a huge risk. And I'm not a risk taker. But I figured I had nothing to lose. So I called them up and said, I'm interested in this position. And they said, we'd love to have you. So they hired me, and the next couple of years, I rolled in the money. I was making three times what I was making before. And as I think about this now, almost three decades later, basically three decades later, I realized that if that, quote, bad thing hadn't happened to me, then I wouldn't have taken that risk. And one of the best things in my life happened to me was I made more money. I went to a smaller company. I learned entrepreneurship. I ended up leaving there, starting my own company, and ended up rolling that into what I'm doing today. All those things came out of that quote unquote bad thing. And one of the exercises I give my clients to do is to draw a timeline of their life on a piece of paper. You can draw it left to right. You might have to make it a winding path because some of us have longer lives than others. But you make a long winding path of what your lifeline, the timeline is. And then along that path, you plot the bad things that have happened to you, the things that you didn't want, the things that at the time you thought were awful. Then you go back to each of those moments in your life and you think of something, quote, good that came out of it. You may have learned a lesson. You may have learned what not to do. You may have gotten stronger because of it. It might have caused you to build strength, or it might have inspired you to do something that you would not otherwise have done. And I can tell you in my experience, every single time someone does this, no matter what the event is that happened, they can find something good that came out of it. Now, in Helping Parents Heal, I remember some mothers talked about this. And they talked about, they call it silver linings. And when they first proposed this silver linings, there were a few people in the organization that were pretty upset. And they said, nothing good can come out of my child's passing. And please don't try to tell me that there can be. And I certainly understand that there's got to be a time when you're ready to experience this. But if you do get the time where you're far enough out, you might want to start playing around with this idea and seeing what might have come out of it. Now, again, that's extreme. Losing a person is extreme. So when I ask my clients to do this exercise, I ask them at first, don't go to, you know, losing a person. Let's stick with things that are more digestible. And for when Shayna passed, how long it took me to see any silver linings, I really can't tell you. I can tell you it's not measured in weeks. It's not measured in months. It's measured in years. But once I got that perspective, it really helps me to deal with all of the bad things that happen in life. Because I realized that given enough time, given enough distance, I think I'm going to see good in them. I have every single time. And the way I look at it is, if there's something I'm not seeing in the good now, then maybe it has to get to the perspective where I zoom out past this human life. Maybe it is when I cross over. And I've heard people from the near-death experience I've listened to say that crossing over is like waking up from a dream. That, you know, this life is very real. It's very important. But it's like, it's not as real as where we go. And the things that we go through here and the 70 or 80 or 90 years we might experience here are like the blink of an eye when it compares to eternity. So that would also explain maybe why did we choose to do this? Why did we choose to go through all this crap? Because it feels so hard. And I remember one of my favorite, I love any kind of competitive shows. I love sports. There's a show called Alone that I like. And Alone is the most extreme of these shows. And these contestants go out or they're taken out and they're literally alone. They're given camera equipment and they're given like 10 items, no food, just 10 items. And they go out to the wilderness and they film themselves. So they don't see another person for as long as they can stay. And some of them stay, well, some of them stay 2 or 3 days, which is interesting. Because they tap out usually not because of physical things, but because they get so deeply lonely. But some of them stay up to like 3 months. So on Alone, you might say, well, why would you do that? Well, that show, there's a $500,000 prize. So you might say, okay, well, they're doing it for the money. But before I saw Alone, I watched a show called Naked and Afraid. Now, Naked and Afraid is, I guess, in some ways more extreme. It's only a 21-day period you're trying to survive. but you have literally no clothing, no shoes. You get like a machete and a pot, and that's it. And there are two people, they're paired up. And you have to see how long you can survive in the wilderness. Now, when I started watching these shows, I'm fascinated. Like, why would people do this? On that show, again, there's no prize money. They do it because they want to test themselves. They do it because they want to see how much they can endure. They do it because they think after they come out of it, they'll be a better person for having gone through it. So if we would leave the comfort of our homes to go put ourselves in a situation where we are starving, where we're desperate for water, where we're maybe cold or suffering for just the thrill of doing it, then doesn't it make sense that maybe our soul from a higher level perspective would say, I'm going to go to Earth and I'm going to suffer or take the risk even of loving and losing. I know that it's going to be hard, but I think it's probably going to be worth it in the end. So in that case, again, going back kind of to the Adjustment Bureau, going to the soul planning thing, you know, even if you don't believe that everything happens for a reason, that you don't believe that things are necessarily predestined. As I said earlier, we are meaning making machines. We are people who don't have to just accept meaning. We can create meaning. So whatever it is that's happened to you, you can create meaning from it. And you can look at that framework, as I said earlier. Can I use this to help me grow? Can I use this to inspire me? Can I learn something from this? You can take that thing that's happened to you, whatever it is, and you can choose to make meaning from it. So we talked about the why questions, and I'm hopefully giving you, and hopefully my thought experiments have given you some answers that you can play around with. I don't claim to have the answers. I don't claim, as I said, I can hand this to you and say, here, accept this. These are things that I've come to, conclusions I've come to, based upon looking at the evidence and thinking about what makes sense to me over the course of a long, long time. But here's what I want you to sit with also. And this is a question I'm going to give you. Because as I said earlier, you don't need all the answers to go through your grief process. We don't need all the answers. What we need is enough meaning to keep living. And we need enough love to keep risking connection, even after connection has cost us everything once already. That's what we need. Just enough answers, just enough meaning, just enough hope. Dr. Neil talked about moving from hope to belief to trust. So at the beginning, as you get some of these concepts, you might think, oh, I wish I could believe it. I was talking to someone earlier on Substack today, and she said to me, I wish I could believe what you're talking about, because if I could believe what you're talking about, it would bring me so much peace. And I said, my hope for you is that one day you not only believe what I'm talking about, but that you trust what I'm talking about, that you know what I'm talking about. So I don't want you to abandon the why questions, not at all. In fact, I want you to keep asking them. That is what grief is going to bring to you. I don't think you could stop it even if you tried. Neither could I. What I want for you is to hold it differently. Hold it with curiosity instead of accusation. Instead of saying, why me? Say, why? What is this here to teach me? What can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? Let this be a question that you're walking beside instead of a wall that you're throwing yourself against. And when that question visits you at 3 a.m. or in the grocery store aisle, or in the quiet after everyone else has gone home, I want you to have this question ready, because it's the one that actually moves you forward. Not why did this happen, but who am I becoming? Before I let you go this week, I want to give you a preview of what's coming next. We spent a lot of time correcting the myth that grief moves through neat, predictable stages. But if grief isn't a staircase, a steady climb up, what is it? Well, next week, we're going to dig into something called the dual process model. It's the idea that healthy grieving isn't about pushing through your pain until you come out the other side. It's about oscillation, moving back and forth between facing the loss head on and building a life that can hold it. I tell you, the clients I work with, some of them are just so exhausted and they just grind and grind and grind. And it took me a while to figure out why they were so exhausted. And we're going to talk about that next week. Some days you're going to be deep in it. You're going to be missing them. You're going to be aching for them. And other days you're going to laugh. You're going to go to work. You're going to plan a vacation and you're going to feel almost normal. Neither one means you're doing it wrong. And next week, I'll show you why that back and forth isn't a sign you're broken. It's a sign you're actually healing. You're doing it right. That's it for me for today. I'm Brian D. Smith. This has been After the Storm. Make sure you check me out on Substack. That's grieftogrowth.substack.com. Grief, the numeral two, growth.substack.com. We can continue the conversation. Hopefully, I'll see you next week. Have a great one. Thank you for spending this time with me on After the Storm. If today's conversation resonated with you, I'd love to continue the journey together. You can find more of my work at www.grieftogrowth.com. That's grief, G-R-I-E-F, the numeral two, growth.com. Until next week, remember, after the storm is where the healing begins.